natural gas. 16 involved cellular phone service. 8 involved complaints related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 10 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,478 of the 1,778 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,674 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments from the commissioners? With that, we are going to skip ahead to natural gas. First item under natural gas on docket on page 3 is NG06007 in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Energy for approval of tariff revisions. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions?
Is joining the meeting.
Good morning. Rita, was that you?
That is me, yes.
Good morning. Thank you for joining.
I
apologize. We did not have the internet up and running, so if somebody, you may have been waiting to hear us on the internet and then jumping in, my apologies on that was my fault here and here. And we are on natural gas NG06007. Mr. Gerdes.
Commissioner Saar and members of the commission, I'm Dave Gerdes, a lawyer from here, and I represent Northwestern. My understanding is that there's been an agreement on this docket. This docket, is that correct?
Staff has a recommendation.
Yeah.
I can
speak. I'm speaking for Brett Kennecke, so my script is a little bit short on this one.
I guess I can start off. Jeff Decker is also on the phone from Northwestern. If there's any questions to, you know, be directed to either Jeff or myself. On September 1st, 2006, Northwestern Energy filed an application seeking approval of revisions to its fuel retention percentage in the gas transportation's tariff. The filing is made to comply with the provisions of the gas transportation tariff that states that the fuel retention percentage will be adjusted annually to be effective on October 1st. Based on the actual percentage incurred by the company for the prior 12-month period ending July 31st. The proposed revision was increased the fuel retention percentage for loss unaccounted for gas from 0.6% to 1.44%, an increase of 0.84%. Staff would recommend approval of the changes to be effective for service rendered on and after October 1st, 2006.
Thank you. Any further questions from Northwestern? Hearing none, do we have any questions or comments from commissioners?
Hi, Jeff. Dusty Johnson here in Pierre. Could you just give me some idea of how these numbers, you know, would compare from what's typical with other utilities or any national benchmarks or averages? Thanks.
I guess I'm not aware of what other utilities run. It's within the range of what we've been running the last two, three years. The number's real consistent in the low 1% range. I mean, last year we were 0.6, but usually we're in the 1 to 2% range, so it's just where we've been historically.
The four-year average is 1.2% without including this year's average, which would raise it up a little bit.
Thanks very much.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners?
Move for approval according to staff recommendations.
Second.
And I concur. Next, under natural gas, we are going to skip to the agenda. Item number 2 has been replaced on the regular agenda by the item number 1 on the addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting, NG06008, in the matter of the application of South Dakota Intrastate Pipeline Company to increase its transportation charges. The question today is, shall the commission grant the request to withdraw the petition and close the docket? Staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. Mr. Robineau is the attorney for SDIPC, and he filed a letter September 21 asking for withdrawal of this matter, and staff would recommend granting that.
Thank you. Do we need to hear from anyone else then, is anyone else appearing?
Nothing else has been done on the docket. No intervention has been granted to anyone. And Mr. Robineau is out of the country. I believe he's in London, so He said that was scheduled before this, so he decided to go.
I guess we could refuse to withdraw the petition and close the docket. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Hearing none, I will move that the commission grant the request to withdraw the petition and close the docket.
Second. Concur.
Next item under natural gas, number two, and this is on the addendum to the agenda of the commission meeting, NG06012, in the matter of the application of Montana-Dakota Utilities Company for a waiver of tariff. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the waiver? Do I hear from staff first or MDU? Mr. Knadel?
I can go first, I guess, then Rita can inject if she would like. MDU filed for a waiver of paragraph 4 of section number 3 of first revised sheet numbers 29.2 and 30.2 of the South Dakota Purchase Gas Adjustment Tariff, which specifies that the surcharge adjustment for the over-under recovery balance in the purchase gas cost adjustment account is effective May 1st of each year. MDU is requesting a waiver of the May 1st date and is proposing to implement an out-of-cycle surcharge adjustment to apply during the period October 1st through April 30th, 2007, due to an over-recovery in the deferred gas account. The waiver would be applicable to the Black Hills and East River natural gas systems. The over-recovery balance for residential and general service customers is as follows. For the Black Hills system, the over-recovery balance at the end of September is projected to be $1.828 million and will be flowed back at 38.2 cents per decade. The East River system over-recovery balance at the end of September is projected to be $97,000 and will be flowed back at 15.6 cents per decade. And if you keep the same adjustment factor that they currently have in, the balance is just going to keep getting bigger. So then, the over recovery is going to be substantial with time May 1st comes rolling around. Staff would recommend approval of the waiver as requested.
Thank you. Ms. Mulkern, do you have anything to add to staff's presentation?
No, I believe staff covered it well.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being available for commissioner questions and for any assistance. With that, do commissioners have any questions or comments?
Am I correct in looking at this and looking at the information that this will result in effectively a decrease in all rates?
Yes, for the residential and general service, I believe there. I'll be on the speaker here. Sorry about that. I believe there is a decrease for industrial also, but I'd have to look here.
Well, my notes show that for the Black Hills system, there's a decrease in residential and general service. There's a decrease for large interruptible customers, and there's a decrease for the Air Force. As well as for East River, there's a decrease for general service customers, and there's a decrease for customers on 100% load factor rate. And I assume there is also a decrease in the residential as well for East River. Is that correct?
It's correct. Residential and general service.
Okay. For as many flags that are usually flown when there's an increase, I just thought there'd be a lot more hoopla for decreases. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other commissioner questions or comments?
I would just ask if Commissioner Hansen makes the motion to approve that trumpets be sounded.
I'll make a motion for approval. You make the trumpets.
Yeah, I'll second.
And I concur. With that, we're going to go back to the regular agenda on page 3, telecommunications. First item is TC05157 in the matter of the application of Vanco Direct USA LLC for a certificate authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services and local exchange services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the certificate of authority to Vanco Direct USA LLC? Staff?
Thank you, Chairman. This is Bob Knadel again. Vanco Direct USA LLC filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide resold inter-exchange telecommunication services throughout South Dakota and resell local exchange services in existing service areas of Quest. The company has agreed to restrictions from offering prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, in collecting deposits and advance payments and has requested a waiver from ARSD 2010-24-02 Print 8 and 2010-32-03 Print 11, which requires the filing of a current cash flow statement. Staff would recommend approval of the application subject to rural safeguards and subject to the condition that the company not offer any prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, not accept or require any deposits or advance payments without the prior approval of the commission. Staff would further recommend a waiver of the ARSD 2010-24-02 Print 8 and 2010-32-03 Print 11.
Thank you very much. And I assume there's nobody representing Vanco Direct USA, is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Gertis didn't pick this one up, huh? Any questions or comments from the commissioners? If not, I will move the commission grant the certificate of authority to Vango Direct USA, LLC.
Second.
Excuse me, with the staff recommended restrictions?
Yes, with staff recommended, with staff's recommendations.
Second.
Next item under telecommunications, number 2, TC06046, in the matter of the application of MCC Telephony of the Midwest, Inc., doing business as Mediacom, for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services and local exchange services in South Dakota. And the question today is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to MCC Telephony of the Midwest, Inc., doing business as Mediacom? And I'll look to staff. Do we want to hear from MCC first, or what is the...
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This is Phil Lusk with staff. Perhaps if I just gave a preface, and then we also have Mr. Gertis and representatives from MCC that would be able to address some technical questions.
Thank you. Is that, Mr. Gertis, is that okay on behalf of your client? Okay. Why don't we go ahead with staff then?
This was a very interesting docket. I'll preface my comments with that. And originally filed on May 12th, staff apologizes that it took as long as June 16th for it to issue its first data request. And eventually, after a second data request, MCC has responded completely to all of our requests for information as of yesterday. MCC will be providing VoIP, Voice over Internet Protocol services, and that's what made this a very interesting docket. Once again, we have representatives from MCC that can discuss how specifically their customers will interact with the public switch telephone network and the interconnections through Quest Network to Sprint, but basically this is not a direct interconnection to the Internet. It's through a proprietary network. The FCC has previously declared that one type of VoIP or Internet telephony service is not subject to traditional state public utility regulation, and basically the basis for the ruling was that that services cannot be practically separated into intrastate and interstate components and therefore precluded from dual regulation. And while the service that is being offered by MCC cannot practically be separated into its intrastate and interstate components at this time, it does differ from the FCC's ruling in three specific categories. The first is that the traffic travels over a private server network prior to the PSTN and is never shared over the open Internet. The second key difference is that the class of service, basically the service quality, is guaranteed over specific bandwidth. And thirdly, the FCC ruling deals with a specific Internet-based portable application in the case of Vonage, whereas MCC's is a fixed facilities-enabled application. Staff had many questions regarding the use of 911 and E911 services. MCC and Sprint follow the NENA, National Emergency Numbering Association, standards, and basically Sprint establishes the necessary contacts with the PSAPs and the various database providers and completes all necessary testing per the applicable PSAP and state requirements. They did some tests in each rate center in their South Dakota market using the certification procedures and have also successfully implemented their services in Sprint's dedicated 911 wire networks in states like Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, and Missouri. There are some potentials for error. And in the context of a trouble failure rate, which was reported by MCC as approximately 0.016%, or if I've done my math correctly, one failure for every 6,250 calls made. We did contact NINA, who indicated that this trouble failure rate is within the range experienced nationally by all telephony providers. And basically, NINA also indicated that the true failure rate of 911 and E911 services is significantly less than the trouble failure rate. So once again, you know, there is potential, okay, potential for misrouting and through address mismatch. But once again, true failure rates are generally much less than the reported trouble failure rates. And I think at this point I have some recommendations and a summary, but perhaps Mr. Gerdes or MCC might want to further make some additional comments.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, this indeed has been an interesting docket, and I have on the line Ann Sokol and Myman, who is an attorney, and J.R. Walden, who is the technical guy, that hopefully among the three of us we can answer any questions the Commission will have. Suffice it to say that this application represents a situation where Mediacom, through its subsidiary MCC Telephony of the Midwest, wishes to provide switched telecommunication services to its cable subscribers, is essentially what this is, and they have contracted with Sprint to provide access to the public switched telecommunications network. It's an application that has been used before, and it is distinct and different from the Vonage situation, as Mr. Lusk has indicated, because it furnishes a proprietary network over which the signal passes. It is switched. It is locally switched, and it does have 911 service. My understanding of the 911 failure rate analysis is that, according to NINA, this is well within the parameters of which they deem as acceptable, and that therefore there really isn't. I mean, there's a potential, yes, but there's always a potential for a failure in any telecommunication service, as we know when people dig into the earth and things such as that. But we would ask the Commission to grant the certificate of authority. It provides another avenue for people to connect to the public switch telecommunications network. If the Commission has questions, I don't have a lot of technical knowledge, but I have somebody on the line that does.
Thank you. And I guess I do have a question. And first of all, I think it's kind of exciting technological developments and perhaps a way that some people can offer service that maybe couldn't cost-effectively do so and do so at some pretty competitive rates. So I think, by and large, seems to be a very positive thing for consumers. And certainly it's one of these cases where you look at it and the Vonage orders and cases and the SEC orders and all that, and you wish you had more time to discuss it, but it may not even be necessary other than just it's kind of fun theoretical and legal practice. I guess my question has to do with the consumer marketing materials. And, you know, I was just curious, do they, do you know if when the MCC goes out and markets the information, do consumers understand what they're signing up for? I mean, will they be able to understand that this isn't necessarily the same service and that there are some different dynamics in it than what you might have with a, you know, regular direct phone line type connection? And that might be – that's kind of out of left field. That might be something more for MCC, but I think it's a legitimate question, is making sure that consumers know what they're getting and you know, leave it to them to make some of the choices.
But to Mr. Lusk's credit, he put us through the paces on that, and there are several consumer – documents that they received, not the least of which is a booklet and also a sheet that describes the service and how it interfaces with 911 service. I think perhaps, I don't know how much detail you want to go into, but it's a booklet that's probably 30 pages long.
You know, and I think like and it maybe suffice to just see if that kind of met with Mr. Lusk's approval, or did you think it gave the consumers enough information so that they can accurately make a decision and, you know, compare a little bit of apples to oranges?
This is staff again, Phil Lusk, and yes, sir, I'm very convinced that MCC is, you know, making its due diligence in terms of consumer education. You know, a particular concern is, of course, that the terminal adapter used to provide phone service does use household electrical power. And, you know, what about the instance of when there's a power outage? The phone service that MCC does provide includes a battery backup with that, which does provide power for a limited time during outages. And I'm convinced, okay, that through their educational outreach and stickers that are attached to the instrument, that the customers, you know, given clear instruction that the service provided will not function when there's an extended loss of commercial power, for example. You know, once again, this information is provided with literature as well as warning labels. And once again, this information is provided in full accordance with FCC requirements.
Thank you very much. Other questions or comments from commissioners?
Mr. Lust, you indicated you had a recommendation.
Yes, sir, I do. I guess the applicant, I guess in summary, the applicant has requested a waiver from filing current financial specifications under ASRD 2010-3203 sub 11 to the extent that it would require company-specific financial data. Basically, this is a new company, even though the parent is well established. The applicant has also requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-2402 sub 8 for the same reason. Also, the applicant has proposed that it may require advance payments and deposits and has placed a surety bond in the amount of $25,000 through the Hanover Insurance Company to prove its financial capability pursuant to 2010-0404 sub 5. And Hanover is a foreign insurance company that is truly licensed in the state of South Dakota. Staff, therefore, recommends approval of the Certificate of Authority subject to rural safeguards, and staff further recommends waiver of the ASRD requirements of 03 sub 11 and 02-8.
Commissioner Hansen.
I just have a question. I'm also very excited about this type of operation and opportunities in South Dakota. I'm most interested in the PSAP, the relationships on 911 and enhanced 911. And you had thrown out a couple of figures, percentages, real quick there. I believe you said 0.016. You
percent. 0.016%.
Okay, so 16,000ths of a
yes.
percent.
And once again, that calculates out to one. It's not a true failure rate, okay, this is a trouble failure rate, once again, which could be something as simple as incorrect information in the database, for example, an address mismatch. Somebody transposed, 3201 for 1203. And once again, Nina indicated that the true failure rates of the 911 and E911 services are significantly less than the trouble failure rates.
That's surprising. I thought it would be much higher than that, especially with the publicity that we've heard on it. I believe you said something like one out of every 1,600 or something like
no,
that.
No, one out of every 6,250.
Yes, I was going to say it's closer to the 6,000
yes,
mark. I thought you had – I didn't hear you correctly then. Could you tell us – you said a couple of several states where they have worked through some opportunities for – enhanced 911? I didn't quite catch that.
This was, as I have it in my notes, sir, it's dedicated 911 wireline service in Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, and Missouri. But perhaps MCC could address that.
Yeah, I'm interested in knowing what challenges they would see coming into South Dakota, what opportunities there are from that standpoint, if we can parallel those opportunities in the other states so that we can have the best 911 system for the customers.
JR, do you have an answer to that?
Yes. In that, we really haven't experienced any what I would call challenges with the either 911 or E911, depending on what's supported locally. We implemented technically almost identical to how a phone company does. We have dedicated facilities built from our network, EDM facilities that go into the PSAP. To support 911 or E911. These are all 911 services are
provisioned as part of the installation of the service. There's no customer action required. We load both the Alley and Annie databases with names and addresses, properly MSAC validated, as is normal in the telephony world. And so it's really done, identical, and it's a fairly well-established process. When we're done, we do with our partner Sprint do testing in collaboration with the PSAPs, place test calls to both confirm connectivity to each local PSAP as well as Alley any pop-up functionality. And I don't think we've run into any particular issues that replicated anywhere. On occasion, there are circuit testing that needs to be done on a new circuit, things of that sort, but once testing is complete, we haven't had issues.
Thank you very much. This sounds like one of the benefits of being in South Dakota is that they experiment in other states before they get here, and they usually have it going fairly well.
And just once again, through the Sprint network, they have done a number of simulations in the state of South Dakota, which they do have already provided us with those.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you. This doesn't relate explicitly to something that's within the required data that you need to provide, but just out of curiosity, can you explain whether or not you do, and if so, how you provide the kind of signaling information that's specified for intercarrier compensation separation in our statutes, mainly the statutes beginning with 4931-109? And again, wait, the reason I bring that up is we've had some, I don't know, I guess the beginnings of some smoldering problems out there with certain carriers who believe there are problems with appropriate intercarrier compensation being paid in the case of various IP-type services. Could you maybe address that and how that works with your system? Right, Mr. Walden?
I probably couldn't. I apologize. It's not my area of expertise. My understanding is we handle that with our partner Sprint, and they have established arrangements for these kinds of things, as they were at least when we originally started with them, both a ILEC in a number of locations as well as an established long distance carrier, and they have arrangements with all the major, most of the minor companies out there that they interconnect with for basic terminating and originating access fees and things of that sort, which is I think what you're speaking to, but beyond that, in more detail, I would need to get a resource I don't have immediately available to me, unfortunately, to answer your question in more detail.
Okay. But as far as you know, the usual intercarrier call identification information is provided in connection with your services?
Yes.
Okay, so that it does enable then some kind of at least reasonably accurate separation of minutes for the jurisdictions, as far as you know?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Thank you.
Any other questions from commissioners or from advisors? Any further comments from staff?
No, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Gerdes, any further comments or clarifications?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Lusk, did you need some additional time before commissioners made a motion? I saw you chatting with other staff members there.
Well, staff would be the first to admit that the concept of intercarrier compensation, may have been not fully as addressed as it should have been, since it's not usually on one of the analyst punch lists. Perhaps defer for a moment, and I would like to have some chance to counsel with Mr. Gerdes. And could we reconvene momentarily on this topic?
Why don't we do this? Are either one of you on the next docket?
No, sir.
Mr. Gerdes, are you? That's the Great Plains. docket. And then next we have some USF certifications. And we can go next.
No, I'm not.
Why don't we, if you think it'd be useful, why don't we allow you two to
yes, sir. I want to make sure that we've fully addressed this issue to the satisfaction of the advisors and the commission.
Why don't we put this one on hold then, and we'll just move down the docket. And,
yes, sir. Thank you for your consideration.
Absolutely. Well, it's better to be safe than sorry, so thank you. Next item under telecommunications, number 3, is TC-06097 in the matter of filing by Great Plains Communications, Inc. for a waiver of ARSD sections 2010-32-52, 2010-32-53, and 2010-32-54. And the questions today are, shall the Commission grant the waiver of ARSD sections 2010-32-52-54, and shall the Commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of Federal Universal Services support as proposed in each of the above dockets? And who's taking this for staff? Mr. Best, Ms. Kramer?
Fingers pointed at me, so I guess I will take it.
As the mother of the homecoming queen, I think that is within your prerogative. You now have, well, I won't go there.
Staff would recommend that the commission grant the waiver of ARSD sections 2010, 32, 52 through 54 for Great Plains Communications. The company has been certified by the Nebraska Commission as using the federal funds in the appropriate manner, and staff would recommend that the this commission also grant the certification to the FCC and to USAC that the company will use funds in the appropriate manner.
Thank you very much. Any further comments from staff? Any questions from commissioners?
I would just note, I think that this is the type of company that, you know, caused us to put this this exception into the rules. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we grant the waiver of sections 52 and 54 of the ARSD, and that the commission provide certification to the FCC and to USAC regarding the plan for the use of universal service support.
Second.
And I concur. Next item under telecommunications on page 4 of the agenda is number 4 in the matter of the request for certification regarding its use of federal universal service support in dockets TC-06131, 131, 132, 133, 140, 142, 143, 153, 144, 155, and 160. And the question in these dockets is, shall the Commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of Federal Universal Service support as proposed in each of the above dockets? And I'm going to look to the staff on this one to see how we want to take this and how we want to proceed on these. And I don't know, I should also ask, is anyone on the line for any of these dockets? Do you know? Is Hickory Tech in for one of these?
Heartland.
Yeah.
Heartland or Hickory Tech?
Carrie Rice from Heartland.
And then Ms. Rogers? Okay, thank you. Okay, so, you know, let's just be mindful. If we can, let's take mid-content last because Mr. Gertis is stepping out of the room, has stepped out of the room to handle previous agenda item. So with that, I look to Mr. Best or Ms. Kramer. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Ms. Harlan Best. What I would propose to do is to take TC-06132, Northeast Nebraska. And 133 Three River Telco, as these companies are both certified, have both been certified by the Nebraska Commission as using federal funds in the appropriate manner. And the Commission has already approved the waiver request of ARSD 2010-32-52-54 at the last Commission meeting. With that, I would recommend that the Commission grant certification to the FCC and to USAC for Northeast Nebraska Telephone Company and Three River Telco.
All right. Any I think it's probably a good idea to take those two. Any questions or comments from commissioners or advisors on those two particular dockets or agenda items? I guess they are dockets. Hearing none, I will move that in TC06132 and TC06133, that the commission provide certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of federal universal service support as proposed in each of these dockets.
Concur.
All right. Next, Mr. Best.
And the remaining dockets, I believe, can all be handled at the same time, as they have filed in accordance with ARSD 2010-32-52 through 54. Staff would recommend that the commission grant certification to these companies, to the FCC and to USAC, as using funds in the appropriate manner.
Thank you. And I'm going to look to the Ms. Rogers. I assume you just want to be here to be prepared in case you, any questions come up and you don't need to make a prepared statement. Thank you. As long as we say yes, you'll be happy, right? And I'm going to presume on Mr. Gertis's behalf, if something comes up with mid-continent, we'll certainly give him the opportunity to come in and comment on that. With that, do the commissioners have any questions or comments on any of the dockets that staff just recommended approval for?
At the last commission meeting, we had some questions and some more information needed to come in. As I looked, it appeared as though most of that information that I remember us asking for had come in. Mr. Best, anything in particular absent? Any reason why we shouldn't approve any of these?
No. The companies, the respective companies, did respond to the questions that Commission Attorney Rowling Least had, and those comments, answers were filed with the commission.
Thank you. And Ms. Wiest, do you have any further questions or any anything the commissioners should know that would give us any concern?
No, all my questions were answered. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any other questions or comments? With that, since I believe I have the scorecard, in dockets TC06131, 140, 142, 143, 153, 154, 155, 160. I would move that the commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for their use of federal universal services support as proposed in each of these dockets.
Concur. Our second.
You can concur.
Making an assumption.
Well, I'll second it.
I'll concur.
And Mr. Best, did I, and I'll look to Ms. Kramer as well, did we take care of all the docket items under number 4?
Yes, that does.
Thank you. Mr. Gertis, good news. Mid-Continent's getting their certification.
Thank you.
He did a great job.
No,
you did a great job. Thank you to Mr. Lusk and Mr. Gertis for taking a minute to step outside. Mr. Lusk, what do you have to report back on 06046?
Once again, staff is apologetic for the lack of knowledge that this staff of one has on the concept of switched access. And there was a bit of confusion regarding whether or not MCC was able to make a determination on the signal. And basically, while the applicant may have at this time the inability not to differentiate between the signal, but by the time that the call goes through their carrier Sprint, they are able to make the determination for the intercarrier compensation.
Thank you.
Mr. Gertis, any further additions?
No. I think they operate in 6 or 7 states and have never had this problem announced to them. It works.
Thank you, and I'm sure if something's going wrong with it, certainly the parties will have the opportunity to figure it out, or else come before the commission or appropriate entities anyway. So I appreciate you looking into that. Any further questions or comments from commissioners or staff or advisors? Hearing none, I will move that the commission grant a certificate of authority to MCC Telephony of the Midwest, Inc., doing business as Mediacom, subject to staff's recommendations.
Second.
Concurrent.
Thank you. And that concludes the telecommunications items. The remaining items are electricity, and we don't have a gavel, but if we did, I would be turning it over to Vice Chairman Dusty Johnson. So I will turn over the invisible gavel to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. First item on the electricity portion of the docket is EL06-019. It's the matter of the application of Black Hills Power for authority to increase rates for electric service. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant intervention to Rushmore Forest Products? And I would look to staff to see whether they would like to go first or whether someone is on the line for Rushmore Forest Products.
Commissioner, this is Drew Moraska and Tim Droll appearing on behalf of Rushmore Forest Products.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
Just briefly, Commissioner, Rushmore is the largest sawmill located in Hill City, South Dakota. Annual lumber production exceeds 70 million board feet, and it is the largest employer in Hill City. Based on the fact, Rushmore believes that it has a pecuniary interest in this rate proceeding. It seeks to intervene because the proposed rate increase to Black Hills Power will, of course, greatly increase the cost of doing business. It believes that its interests are unique and may not be adequately addressed by other parties. And, of course, no one will be disadvantaged. Granting this intervention, it will merely join as the fourth member of the Black Hills Interveners group, a group that was granted party status on August 24, 2006. Unless the commissioners have any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Ms. Sergeant, Mr. Iverson from Black Hills Power, any comments?
Commissioner Johnson, this is Brian Iverson with Black Hills Power. Black Hills Power this time doesn't have any objection with the representations by the interveners that this addition of additional party won't delay the existing scheduling order and the procedural status of the case.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kramer?
Thank you. Staff would recommend granting intervention.
Any commissioner questions? Any questions from advisors? Hearing none, a motion is in order. And I will move that the commission grant intervention to Rushmore Forest Products.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded and passed. Second item, EL06-020. It's in the matter of the application by Navitas Energy for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the White Wind Farm and associated collection substation and electrical interconnection system. And the question for the commission is, today shall the commission grant intervention to ITC and to SDREA? And a second question is, shall the commission grant the local review committee's request for $2,000 in order to hire a consultant? Perhaps we'll handle the second question first. Shall the commission grant the local review committee's request? Looking to staff, any comments on that?
Staff would recommend granting that request. They have filed a proposal. I believe you do have a copy of that. And for $2,000, I think they can probably get done what needs to be done up there.
Yeah, it is compared to local review committee request for Big Stone 2, it's a small sum of money. Would anybody else have any comments on this item for commissioner questions? Hearing none, are there any commissioner questions, any advisor questions? Hearing none, I would make the motion to grant the local review committee's request for $2,000. Motion passes. Now the question for the commission is, shall the commission grant intervention to ITC and SDREA? Is anybody, the moving parties are ITC and SDREA. ITC first, anyone appearing on behalf of them?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Ryan Taylor appearing for ITC.
Go ahead.
As stated in our pleadings, 4941B-17 identifies who is entitled to be a party to this proceeding. And under sub 3, that would include any person which resides within the area where the facility is supposed to be sited. Under the definitions of what a person is, it does include a cooperative, which would ITC would fall under. The reason for their intervention in this proceeding is that the wind generation facilities and transmission facilities facilities have the potential for causing background noise on their telephony facilities. Because of this, there are public safety and communication issues that are stated. And due to that fact, Interstate would just like to be entitled to party status in this proceeding in the event that there is a disagreement with Navitas, and this body would be the adjudicating authority in that matter.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions from the – we'll go ahead and take – Ms. Rogers, did you want to speak on behalf of SDREA?
Thank you. Very briefly, we have noted in particular a couple of issues that we are of interest to SDREA, and that is that at this in this facility and also future similar facilities, that they'd be required to purchase station power from the local electric service provider in whose territory the facility is located. And then our other concern is the use of the collector lines, and that they that the purchasing entity may not use the collector lines to deliver retail service. So those are the two reasons that we have intervened. There may be more that arise as we go through the docket, but we would request intervention on those particular issues.
Ms. Rogers, is there a particular reason why the statewide association, as opposed to the incumbent cooperative electric provider, is the appropriate intervener?
No, not at all. And in fact, we went back and forth as to who would intervene in this case, and I guess we were looking at it from the broader perspective of, you know, not just this facility, but if we're breaking some ground in our future facilities, that it's of interest to all of our members. We are, however, in touch with the local electric service provider. I would tell you as well that Mr. Gertis has called me to discuss these issues, and we will have the local service provider at the table at any discussions that we have, so they will be very much involved as well.
Okay, thank you. Other questions by advisors or commissioners for either ITC or SDREA?
Excuse me if I could, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rogers, I was writing as you were giving the two reasons why you felt you needed to intervene, and I missed the first one as I was writing.
The first reason was that we are concerned that the White Wind Farm and any future facilities like this be required to purchase station power from the local electric service provider.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
This time I would look to see if anyone representing Navitas would have any comments on the intervention request.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Navitas in this proceeding. We have been in touch with both ITC and SDREA and have discussed their issues, and we do not oppose the interventions. I do, however, and I've mentioned this to Ms. Rogers, I do have the same question that Commissioner Hansen has, and I know in the past the Commission has permitted trade associations for, you know, like South Dakota Telephone Company and SDREA to intervene and have party status in certain dockets, and quite frankly, we don't object that our SDREA could become a party in this docket. But it seems to me that if the relief that they're requesting, or at least part of the relief they're requesting, deals with the local service provider providing power to the wind farm stations, that it ought to be the real party in interest that is a party in this docket as well. In other words, I don't particularly object to the SDREA being here, but it seems to me that if it's whatever the REA is that's in the service for the in whose territory the White Wind Farm is located, it would seem to me that the real party in interest would be that REA, and that they should also be parties to this docket. And I make that comment. I'm not objecting to either of these interventions, but it seems to me that maybe the local REA ought to be at the table as a party as well.
Are you requesting intervention on behalf of Sioux Valley, or?
Well, I you know, that's up to them, but I'm just telling you that it seems rather odd that that a statewide organization which doesn't provide power is asserting that the local provider should be able to provide this power. And so to that extent, there's a doctrine called the real party in interest in litigation, which I think would apply here as well. You've got to have the real party in interest in order to give them the relief. So, but I don't object to either of these interventions.
Ms. Rogers, did you have a response on behalf of SDREA?
There, you may be looking at another petition to intervene following this procedure. I'm not sure if Sioux Valley Energy will be joining our petition to intervene or filing their own. That certainly may be a possibility. We've communicated with them, and I know that they want to certainly be at the table if there are any discussions. You know, I can't speak for them today. They are a member company. We are concerned about their interests, and that's one of the reasons that we've intervened. I'd like to tell you for sure that they will be joining in, but I can't at this point. But they will certainly be given that opportunity again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other commissioner questions for Mr. Gerdes, ITC, SDREA? Ms. Kramer, staff recommendation?
Thank you. Staff has no objection to either intervention and would recommend granting intervention to both ITC and SDREA.
Any comments or motions from commissioners?
I will move to grant intervention to ITC and SDREA.
I will second the motion, which passes. Thank you. Docket item number 3 under electricity EL06-021. It's in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation for approval of a contract with deviations for Redfield Ethanol Plant. And I would, I have been told that, Mr. Gerdes, did you want to address the issue?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just coming up here in case you have comments. I understand that there's a deferral motion.
I would look to staff if you all will be making a motion or asking for.
Right. We would ask for deferral on this matter until such time as Mr. Jacobson is back. We may, if there's an opportunity, we may take it up on an ad hoc.
Certainly, and that's fine by the commissioner, certainly. So any questions or comments by commissioners before taking action? That I would just move that we defer action on this docket.
Second.
The motion carries. Next, the final docket under electricity for today, EL06-024. It's in the matter of the request for an electric service territory boundary change between Black Hills Power and Black Hills Electric Cooperative. And somebody from Black Hills or Black Hills Electric want to address the commission?
Commissioner Johnson, this is Brian Iverson with Black Hills Power again. This petition was submitted by jointly by Black Hills Electric Cooperative and Black Hills Power. There's an existing development which Black Hills Power serves. Right adjacent to that are a number of lots which are going to be added to that development. I think there's 6 of them. We've come to an agreement with the co-op to serve those 6 lots as the most efficient way to handle this process. We have facilities existing in the area that wouldn't be overburdened by it. We can serve the 6 additional homes that would go there. I think that the Black Hills Electric Co-op would have to make additional line extensions to get there. So this is by mutual agreement. It's also been requested by the landowner. And I guess I'll leave it to staff with any other comments. Anyhow.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solem. Ms. Van Bakkeren, anything to add on staff?
The sole landowner of the development has agreed in writing to this transfer of service. Staff would recommend approval of this transfer as it avoids unnecessary duplication of facilities, provides adequate electric service to this area, and promotes the efficient and economical use and development of the electric systems of the utilities as outlined for such transfers in SDCL 4934A55.
Thank you very much. Any commissioner questions or advisor questions? Seeing none, are there any comments or motions? And I would move that the commission approve the request for the electric service territory boundary change.
Second.
The motion carries. I believe that completes our work today. A few announcements. First off, the next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held October 19th at 9:30 a.m. Central Time at the Rapid City Holiday Inn. Of course, that's 8:30 Mountain. Commission meetings are also scheduled for October 31st and November 7th. It's worth noting that on the Commission's calendar, it was originally scheduled for November 14th. So that has been moved up 1 week. And finally, a hearing in docket CE06-003 will be held September 26th. Actually, that has been, I understand that that's not going to be taking place. So that, unless anybody has anything else, we are adjourned.